Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on Methodist hospitals offering coronavirus vaccines on a walk-in basis. Governor Eric Holcomb is directing all state employees to return to their offices by early July. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Diocese of Gary Bishop Robert McClurie about the safe return to Sunday Mass for parishioners in the region. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Methodist hospitals are now offering coronavirus vaccines on a walk-in basis for anyone over the age of 12. The healthcare system is administering Pfizer vaccines at its hospitals in Gary and Merrillville. The clinics are open from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Saturday. The Methodist Care First Shererville facility also will continue to administer the Johnson & Johnson vaccine to anyone 16 or older by appointment only. To make an appointment, visit vaccine.coronavirus.in.gov, call 211, or call Methodist Hospitals at 219-981-4504 from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Indiana's governor is directing all state employees to return to their offices by early July. Governor Eric Holcomb has told state workers the transition from a March 2020 stay-at-home order starts with senior staff who must return by June 7th. Other employees should spend at least 50% of their time at the office by June 21st and return full-time by July 6th. In an email to state employees, the governor says face-to-face conversations lead to innovation and productive work. The state will offer a vaccination clinic at the Indiana Government Center in Indianapolis on June 21st and 22nd.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Indiana University is requiring all students and employees to receive COVID-19 vaccinations for the fall semester and is threatening to cancel class registrations as well as fire staff members who do not comply. IU officials announced the requirements for its campuses across the state last Friday, saying it will allow the university to lift most coronavirus-related restrictions, such as face masks and physical distancing. The university said exemptions to the vaccination requirements will be limited.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Nearly 20 state legislators are protesting Indiana University's decision to require all students and employees to receive COVID-19 vaccinations, and they want the governor to block the move. A letter dated Tuesday to Governor Eric Holcomb calls on him to prohibit any state university from mandating vaccines that do not have full FDA approval. The letter follows IU's announcement on last Friday that COVID-19 vaccinations will be required for fall semester on all of its campuses. The letter, signed by 19 Republican House members, argues that enforcing a mandate for a vaccine that does not have full FDA approval is unconscionable.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Indiana Senate Democrats are renewing their calls for increasing the state's minimum wage. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports it comes as typically lower-wage businesses like restaurants say they cannot hire enough workers.
Democrats have tried passing measures, including during session this year, to gradually increase the state's minimum wage to $15 an hour. In every attempt, Republicans have blocked their efforts. Now Democrats are echoing economists in saying that low-wage jobs, not necessarily unemployment benefits, are causing workers to stay at home. Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor anticipates this summer will be hard for workers struggling to find affordable child care as unemployment programs end. He points out the legislative session technically isn't over and says they could fix this immediately by passing a bill to raise the minimum wage.
We can do it now without the governor calling us back.
The state's current minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, although many employers voluntarily pay more than that. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana Democrats are getting a boost from the National Party, in part because of Republicans' political domination in the Hoosier State. A new fundraising agreement between state parties and the Democratic National Committee will provide a financial boost to every state. But those considered red states, meaning, for instance, there's a supermajority of Republicans in the state legislature and no Democratic senator or governor, will get more money per month than other states. The Indiana Democratic Party is one of those. Chair Mike Schmuel wants to use some of that money for year-round organizing.
Putting staff and people on the ground across Indiana to make sure that they're working in communities in different counties and different parts of the state, and forming relationships with people.
Schmuel says the new agreement will also enhance data sharing between the National Party and Democratic organizations across the state.
It's going to allow us to target voters, to communicate with voters in a faster, more efficient way.
Schmuel says the agreement will help what he calls steady incremental progress in rebuilding the party's statewide relevance.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Methodist Hospitals has a new person on staff that will serve to help guide women and children entering the healthcare system. Marla Hoyer LaRue, Senior Vice President and Chief Nursing Officer, told Lakeshore Public Radio host Sharon Jackson the hospital has named Tracy Shelton to the position. Shelton is the new Service Line Director of Women and Children's Services at Methodist Hospitals.
So how is you being in this position as the Service Line Director for Women and Children's Services benefits the community?
Greatly benefits the community because the being so primarily inpatient, I am in charge of OB services, and typically when women come in to have a baby, that's their first time that they're entering into the healthcare system. So by touching base and capturing these women early, we can put them in contact with a primary care physician and share our other services with them for them and their families.
So tell us a little bit about your new job.
So we have two campuses. I'm over the one in North Lake, South Lake. It's OB services, labor and delivery, postpartum. Over at North Lake, we handle higher-risk patients. We have a NICU also at North Lake, so we can handle preterm deliveries.
Yeah, and I think, Sharon, if I can just add, I think the role of service line director is one that as we look at a woman along the continuum of her life, as Tracy indicated, usually, you know, that first baby or that first, delivery is kind of sometimes a woman's first experience of having to choose a healthcare provider on her own, perhaps, and it's usually the first time they actually, are making decisions on behalf of their family, and we know that most women are the healthcare decision makers in the family. And when we look at a service line, we're looking at women's health. So although Tracy's responsible for the inpatient areas of OB, nursery, NICU, and those, she's also going to be working across with the other service line leaders to develop programming that will impact a woman for her entire life. By making those connections, as Tracy mentioned, by setting them up with a primary care doctor, by doing education on things like self-breast exam, when they need to have screening done, when they need to get their first mammography, perhaps when they need, look based on their family history, do they need to start that sooner, can they wait till later? you know, getting them tied into services for their children in terms of their vaccinations, making sure that they are seeing the pediatrician and hitting those milestones that they need to for development in school.
You mentioned that when a woman has a baby, typically her first entry into the healthcare system, are you working with any special populations, you know, people that don't have health insurance? I mean, is that typical?
So when I speak about services, yes, we are working with an underserved population. So oftentimes, like once they're done with getting the recommended vaccinations for school, then typically they don't enter into the healthcare system again until they are pregnant. And that's on an inpatient basis, so meaning that they are actually admitted to the hospital at that time.
Tracy, why would you say that you being in this position is important, and what would you want people to know about it?
So I think this position is very important because, like I mentioned, we are serving an underserved, predominantly minority population, and these women are at higher risk. Just looking at a few of the alarming statistics, African-American women are 2 times more likely to get cervical cancer. They are women that live in food deserts, which we do have in Gary, have a 10% more higher risk of getting breast cancer. So by getting to these women early, we can educate them on the necessary things they need to do to take preventative actions and screenings for better health care. I think the importance of this role and why we felt this role was important to create, you know, traditionally hospitals just have maybe a manager over those areas or a director, whereas we wanted this to be a service line so that Tracy can work with the community groups that are out there, like Family Partnership or Geminis or any of those types of services that are out there, to help families connect the dots. So even when it comes to childcare after delivery, so we're able to, you know, put programming together that's comprehensive for the community and also involves our community partners. It's just another way in which Methodist is wanting to impact the health, well-being of the population for the communities that we're so privileged to service.
And Sharon, one of my other goals is to get into the school system to begin to talk to young ladies, to talk to them about wellness, healthcare, because if we can educate our young people, they can better inform the adults in their life to get the necessary checkups that they need. And then I'm looking to get into, you know, right now with COVID, things are a little iffy in getting directly into the schools, but that is also one of my goals, is to get into the schools and maybe start some health fairs inside the school. The high school.
Can you talk for a minute about how Methodist Hospital is serving COVID patients? Can you get vaccinated there?
Yes. We have 3 vaccination sites. We have one at the Northlake campus in our administrative building. We have one location here at the Southlake campus. Those 2 hospital-based locations are open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. And then in our urgent care in Schererville, we're also doing vaccinations Monday through Friday. In addition, at both of our emergency rooms, we continue with kind of the drive-through COVID testing. And of course, we're treating COVID patients through our emergency room and also the inpatient setting.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Bishop Robert McClurry.
After a year or so of being allowed to remain out of the pews because of the COVID-19 pandemic, Catholics all across Northwest Indiana will be welcomed back into church beginning on June 11th. And we have with us the person who knows best about the situation, some of the decisions that had to be made that brought us to this point coming up. We have with us the Diocese of Gary Bishop, the Most Reverend Robert McClurry with us. And Bishop McClurry, thank you for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Chris, it's great to be back with you. Of course, we spoke about a year and a half ago.
That's right.
I was getting ready to come. And so it's a joy to be with you to discuss some good news, some transitions in our faith life, and our expression of it here in Northwest Indiana.
With, the decision that was made and the announcement that was made earlier this week about the fact that Catholics will be able to come back into church for in-person masses on starting June 11th, tell us more about the decision, the discussions. I'm sure there were quite a few discussions, I would imagine, probably all of them on Zoom or some other way of teleconferencing, to talk about the questions that may come up, the issues that may come up, but in turn led to the decision to allow for in-person worship again.
Well, thank you so much, Chris. Yes, central to our life as Christians one of the commandments and in the Judeo-Christian and other heritage is to keep holy the Lord's Day. So throughout this time of pandemic, you know, that has still remained clear. The question has been, does one need to come to Mass during this time to fulfill what we would say is that obligation? Because that's how we understand it, is that, you know, you come to Mass and you experience it as a community. So, you know, really going back to March of last year, there was a period that our churches effectively were closed to public worship. You could still come in for some private times of prayer. But about a year ago, we did reopen, but there were certainly many people who, because of their own individual health condition, stayed home. And we also thought that because the pandemic was affecting so many people, that we would extend what's called a dispensation, which is a fancy way of saying, you know, you got to keep holy the Lord's Day, but you don't need to come to Mass to do that. So over the course of the last year, we have really learned. We've had certain protocols in place. And so we have seen a gradual return. But now with the progress in the pandemic, some of the revisions to the public health guidelines, and with consultation with the laity, it's a more full-throated invitation to say, of course, there might be exempting causes, particular situations and health needs that you still need to attend to. So if that's you, it's not like we want to make you feel guilty that you're supposed to be in church when you have a health situation. That's not the case.
Would you take a moment and tell us in more specifics about the health conditions and the other conditions that will allow parishioners that if they choose or if they can't for whatever serious reason to be able to go to Mass basically and do it in person?
Yeah. So certainly, if you're seriously ill or you have flu-like symptoms or you think you may have a contagious disease, you know, we would by all means say, you know, if you need to quarantine, you need to stay home, don't come to church. Or if you feel that you're unwell, we don't want to put you at risk or somebody else at risk. And also, you know, there are always some people who, through no fault of their own, are not able to make it. You know, they may not have transportation. It's also true that some of our parishes are still navigating, accommodating all the folks with some form of social distancing. And so, you know, you need to make sure that you have that accessible to you. But also, you know, we have certain folks who are homebound or they're really incapacitated due to age or infirmity or other medical restrictions. And so we don't want you to go return if you're in that situation. And also, you know, while the vaccine has been widely available, not everybody is able to be vaccinated. I'm fully vaccinated, for which I'm grateful. But if you're not vaccinated, and you're in a risk category, you know, then that certainly would be an understandable situation. So, and we also we know that there are some caretakers of those who are infirm. And so if you're home taking care of a loved one or someone who you're responsible for, you know, we would allow that to extend to them as well. So we're trying to be prudent and charitable about all this. And so those would be some of the factors that would continue to say, hey, you need to stay home. That's okay.
Bishop McGlory, will you take a minute and talk about what's happened in the past year or so, the impact that the pandemic and certainly the decisions that had to lead to basically that people had to stay out of the churches would have on not only people, the parishioners, but the parishes and the priests in the parishes? What have they talked about and the impact that's had on them?
Yeah, certainly. I think, as with the rest of society, it was a sudden change for all of us. And what we've really tried to sustain throughout this and looking to the future is to still reach out to those who are not able to come into the churches for whatever reason. So we've really invested many of our parishes in, you know, some simple things like phone trees or increasing social media presence or even doing much more live streaming. And we have, you know, we did see, you know, gradual return to more and more people coming back. But then, you know, when the spike seemed to really hit again, let's say in November, December, you know, right when we're getting ready for Christmas, it seemed like the trends are working a bit against us. So we really tried to be intentional at Christmas time to let folks know that they're still part of the family, even if they can't make it to church or they need to stay home for a variety of reasons. But we tried to be very responsible with sanitizing stations and social distancing. With masking, and we're modifying some of this now as the CDC modifies, but it has been a loss. You know, we're the family of faith, and we use that verbiage a lot, and so it's kind of felt like the whole family's not been together, you know, in person.
No.
And so it'll be really a beautiful time for us to have more of the family come together.
Was it really difficult in the past 8 months here around Christmas, and particularly all of the observances that center around Easter for parishioners to be able to feel comfortable and still be able to practice their faith?
Yeah, I think, again, we tried to reach out, and we certainly had, you know, the majority of our parishioners were able to at least come back. But because of the time of pandemic, you know, and which we're, I don't want to say we're out of it yet, it was a little bit challenging for some of them. So we tried to provide some in-home resources as well for those who are not able to make it to Mass, you know, some prayer services that you could do with you and your family, a way to kind of make sure that, that you're connected during that time. And, you know, really, Chris, has been for us a season always of prayer. But I think we also want to pray and have a conversation about, you know, what we've lost, what we've gained, what we should do now, what we should do in the future. And certainly, you know, we could just kind of turn the page and say, well, the pandemic is starting to recede, so on we go. But it's a good time for us to reflect and say, you know, are there some things that we've embraced during this time that makes sense for us to continue because we've learned some lessons? Are there other things that maybe we thought were so important that we were spending a lot of time doing in the past that now we need to reconsider that? So really encouraging the parishes to reflect individually on that. And then also, candidly, and thank you for having me on the air, a time of invitation, you know, of really saying, hey, you know, come on back. You know, we're here to keep you safe and healthy and to make sure that you have all the spiritual resources you need from the Catholic Church.
Well, I'm sure that the faithful want to hear from the bishop. They want to hear it in his words, and that was the reason, one of the reasons, of course, we wanted you to come on the program to talk. What does the future look like, in this your estimation, for the Diocese of Gary, as everyone is dealing with the pandemic and as things are starting to lessen in intensity?
Well, I think what we're experiencing, and this is obviously true in the Church as well, you know, is, I would say, a greater return to normalcy. Now, what will that look like as we go into the future? I think, you know, for some people, and I'm not a psychologist, but, you know, there is a kind of a collective I don't know, PTSD, you know, for some, a kind of a post-traumatic stress syndrome where we're still absorbing the last year. I think we've been able to joyfully look to the future. What we're doing really in Northwest Indiana here during this time is I've asked us to continue a season of prayer for hope and healing, because I think that's really what we need. We need hope, and I see signs of that increasing, and also healing, and healing not just because we're still absorbing the physical effects of COVID, but we've had a pretty tumultuous year from social disharmony and racial tensions and a greater sense of needing to address some injustices in the world and, you know, certainly a climate of divisiveness. And so we really need to pray for healing in our families, healing in our community, and also for hope. So I do look to the future with hope. I certainly see signs that people are embracing an additional kind of return to some practices, including their faith practices, that maybe they've gotten away from over the last year.
Well, Bishop McClory, thank you very much for spending time with us. And if you've mentioned a lot in our conversation so far, but if there's anything else that you feel that you want to add to at least reassure more people, and I guess we're doing I guess in a way it's a rather religious pep talk, isn't it? To be able to welcome everybody back that has missed being in church for Mass, to be sure. Do you think that they're ready? Do you think that they are the residents in Northwest Indiana who are faithful Catholics are ready to return?
I think so. I'll tell you, you know, a concrete example that we had really good outdoor turnout, you know, because outdoor events have been a little bit more open, obviously. But, you know, when I led what are called the Stations of the Cross at the Shrine of Christ's Passion on Good Friday, and that was an outdoor event. And so people felt very comfortable coming. Everybody, you know, was respected the different protocols. But, you know, to see the desire that people had certainly in that setting to come together and to pray shows me that there is a pent up desire to return. I would encourage, you know, call your local parish to see what specifically they're doing as we transition back. You know, each parish is making sure that they have the specific protocols to meet their own needs, but we want to keep you safe and make sure that you feel comfortable as you return. So, you know, calling your local parishes would certainly be good. I would say, Chris, you know, one of the things that I think we need to reflect on is kind of a delayed grieving. You know, a lot of funerals that were not held with the same, public rites of worship and mourning and coming together to grieve. So I think we need to reflect a bit on how we can respond to those needs. I'm going to be at a funeral this summer that's really been almost delayed by about a full year.
Wow.
Because of family concerns. And so, you know, some of those things that we really yearn for in our hearts to be able to come together around those moments, I think we'll need to listen and we'll need to respond. And we're certainly here to do that as the Catholic Church in Northwest Indiana.
Well, Bishop McGlory, thank you very much for spending time with us to talk about the changes that will take effect here with the Catholic churches in Northwest Indiana beginning on June 11th. And our best to everybody, certainly at the parishes and the parishioners that will be coming back. And we know it's going to be a joyous time. Maybe less so for some people, but for most, I'm sure it will be. And thank you for spending time with us to talk about it.
Amen. Thank you so much, Chris.
You're welcome. We've been speaking with the Most Reverend Robert McGlory. He is the Bishop of the Diocese of Gary.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.